Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, listener mail. This is Robert Lamb.
And this is Joe McCormick, and it's Monday, the day of each week we read back some messages from the Stuff to Blow Your Mind mailbag. If you would like to get in touch and you've never done it before, why not give it a try? You can reach us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com. All kinds of messages are fair game. If you have corrections, suggestions for future topics, feedback on a recent show, whatever it is, send it on in. Let's see, Rob, do you mind if I get started with this message from Stephanie about our episodes on whale spouts?
Yeah, let's have it.
So this is responding to a couple of shows we did based on a chapter in Moby Dick where the narrator describes the whale's blowhole and what comes out of it. Among many strange claims made in that chapter was that whale blow was poisonous, that if it went in your eyes, it would blind you. And in some cases, if it touched the skin of, say, the arm or the hand, it would cause your skin to peel off. In short, none of this is really true, but after some research, we did wonder if these claims might be based on stories of people having skin rashes, conjunctivitis, and other topical infections after exposure to whales, which is a well-documented phenomenon among people who handle marine mammals directly. You can get zoonotic infections, skin rashes, and so forth from them. Stephanie says, "Hi, Rob and Joe. Thanks for another series of fascinating episodes on whales. I'm no biologist, but an alternate explanation for Ishmael's suggestion that whale blow is poisonous occurred to me. Could it not just be the extreme pressure of the air / mucus expulsion that caused the side effects described? According to this Quebec Research Bureau," and she includes a link, "whales can spout air from their lungs at a rate of 720 kilometers per hour. I can imagine that sticking your arm into a 720 kilometer per hour jet of air could give you some pretty serious road rash or air rash. Sticking your eyes directly in front of this jet of air seems like it could lead to temporary or permanent blindness, too. Thanks, as always, for expanding my horizons of interest, Stephanie." Well, thanks for the message, Stephanie. Yeah, on that question, I really just don't know. That does seem like very, you know, that would be an extreme blast. It does, you know, it exceeds hurricane wind speeds. But there are also plenty of modern day accounts of people who take whale spout blasts to the face or to the skin, and it doesn't usually seem to cause immediate physical injury, at least in the cases we've seen or read about. But on the other hand, yeah, it's hard to say for sure. Like, this is a case where I would love to hear from somebody who does have a lot of direct experience working with whales or handling marine mammals.
All right. And now we're going to get into some of the listener mail that we've been receiving regarding our episodes on the moons of Uranus. Let's see. Where should we start with these? I guess I'll start with this one from Joseph. Joseph writes, I first found your podcast in 2015 due to your Saturn's Brood and Children of Jupiter episodes, great episodes, and I was very excited to listen to this week's Uranus Moon episode. The Greek god is pronounced Uranus. The NASA official pronunciation is Uranus. And I should add that Joseph is spelling this out. It's your anus. Most people, including myself, say Uranus, spelled out as in P and us, to make it more palatable in the English language. The true proper pronunciation is your anus, according to NASA scientists, but most folks just say Uranus. German scientist Johann Erlich Bode proposed the name to name the planet Uranus, and his associate Martin Heinrich Klaproth named the element uranium in solidarity with him as a way to push the establishment to accept the name Uranus, which has a near identical pronunciation. In German, Uranus does not have the same connotations as in American English. Can't wait to listen to the rest of the episode. Keep up the good work. Best regards, Joseph.
This is interesting because this is in direct contradiction to stuff we have heard from other listeners or stuff I've read on the internet. So I don't know. I mean, people just seem to be all over the place on what you're supposed to say.
Yeah. I'm staying in the Uranus camp, though. Firmly positioned there.
Yes, but thanks nonetheless, Joseph. We got the following message from our listener, Constantine, about the pronunciation of the name of the planet Uranus. Constantine says, hello, gentlemen. Let me begin with a simple thank you for your hard work in putting out an informative, entertaining, and addictive podcast. I've been listening to you all since back when you were a threesome, and your show continues to be on the top of my weekly rotation of podcasts. Oh, well, thank you, Constantine. I recently heard your Moons of Uranus podcast, and once again, you fell into the rabbit hole of proper pronunciation. The word Uranus does not even begin with a U, but with an O in the original Greek, so the popular English pronunciation is certainly questionable at best. As a native Greek speaker, having been born in French Canada, let me provide you with an official, bona fide, definitive opinion of an answer as to how to best speak Greek in English. The answer is, do with it as you will. the satanic maxim of pronunciation. I like this level of license, but Constantine goes on. Much of Greek came to English via those grand cultural appropriators, the Romans, and then back in the 18th century or so, English intellectuals decided to standardize English Greek with novel grammatical protocols. Not to bury the headline, but this game of telephone went badly. To begin with, Greek is not even a thing. The name came from the Romans. There is not even a G in Greek. We call ourselves Hellenes, and Greece is Hellas. Wait, it gets worse. There is not even an H at the start of the word Hellenic. Remember those English intellectuals I mentioned earlier? They decided that words that begin with the Greek epsilon or E will have a leading H in English for reasons unfathomable. That's right, it's not Helen of Troy, it is Ellen of Troy.
Huh.
Speaking of H, the Greek H, or it's spelled C-H-I here, is that chai or chi? I don't know how to say that, is turned into a K sound in English. Yes, it is pronounced character and architecture, not character and architecture. It goes on and on, like there are no D or J in Greek, so it is not Delta or Jesus Christ either. It is Delta and Iosus Christos.
Hmm.
Yeah, you can look it up. While we're at it, the real plural of octopus is octopodia. So if all that got jumbled up, what chance is there that Uranus's original Hellenic pronunciation of Uranos could possibly survive through Roman transmission and English, quote, Greekification? It can't. Don't fight it. Now more people pronounce it Uranus than Uranos, and such is life. And if pedants come along with an alternative pronunciation, tell them to, quote, stick it up, let's say Uranos, stick it up Uranos. As for us Hellenes, we're just happy to be invited to the party. Cheers, good folks, Constantine. Well, thank you, Constantine. I'm sorry, I probably also pronounced some of those Greek words in your email wrong, but yeah, we're doing our best here. There's a whole mess of trouble leading up to everything happening with these words in our brains today.
All right, Constantine also adds, P.S. Monster Fact is fun but short. Up your game, people. Well, thank you. I'm glad you enjoy it. They are short by design, but we're going to continue to experiment with putting out omnibus episodes, which take multiple related episodes from the past and cobble them together into one episode. In fact, next week there will be an omnibus episode of vampires.
Ooh, nice. Well, actually, so since we did that, Constantine includes several PSs, so we got a PPS and stuff. The PPS that he adds is that Uranus is simply the word for sky and is still the word for sky in modern Greek. And Gaia is still our word for Earth. And yes, you spotted it. There is no G in Greek. Are you ready for this? Gaia is the poetic form of gamma eta and is pronounced ye.
Okay.
I think poetic means, quote, getting it wrong. So it is Uranos and ye, not Uranus and Gaia.
All right.
And there are several more PSs, actually, but I think we'll cap it there.
All right, this next one comes to us from Jared, another one responding to our episode on the moons of Uranus. Jared says, hey, guys, really enjoyed these episodes and looking forward to more like them. All right, well, we'll have to come back to Neptune in the future. And then Jared goes on to comment about the Shakespearean names. They write, quote, it was a compromise between Great Britain and the rest of the European astronomers. Since they couldn't call it George, it was agreed the moons would all be named for British literary characters, at least according to what I heard on Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson's podcast. Keep up the good work, Jared.
Yeah, I've read something similar. So the idea was that when William Herschel, the English astronomer, first discovered Uranus as a planet, he wanted to call it Georgium Sidus, I think, meaning the George star, named after King George of England, which we found that idea quite amusing. It's like, hey, let's name the planet Neptune Millard Fillmore star or something. But yeah, so it was agreed instead that the names would come from mythology instead of from political figures to avoid having national rivalries appear in the heavens. And that does seem to be the case. But I guess it's maybe somewhat of a concession to Herschel's desire to name it after the English king, to name it after characters by an English playwright and poet. Mm-hmm. Or not the planet, I guess the moons. Okay, I think we're going to cap the Uranus messages there, but we've got a whole bunch of messages on hand about Weird House Cinema, so maybe we should try to read some of those, including some messages in response to Time Cop. So Lawrence writes, hey guys, just listening now to your episode on Time Cop, and you said it's your fourth time travel film. Not to jump down your throat or such, but you're not counting Santo in the Treasure of Dracula, and I think you ought to. Thanks, Lawrence. Lawrence, oh my God, you're correct. Mm-hmm. This must have, I don't remember which one of us said that, but this must have been an oversight because it is true, Santo not only has a time machine in that movie, I think he invents the time machine.
Yes, my apologies to the saint. This was me forgetting that Santo and the Treasure of Dracula was actually a time travel film. Now, I won't say it's one that really does any hard thinking about time travel, but there is a time machine.
Thinking on it, somehow that movie doesn't really fit any of the story, the main story categories we talked about, or if it does, it's not really the main use of the time travel in it is just like watching videos of the past, isn't it?
Yeah, but wasn't there also some like theft via time travel? Like, wasn't that part of it? It's like, we have found Dracula's treasure in the past. We can steal it.
Maybe they saw where Dracula left his treasure in the past, which allowed them to go there in the present to retrieve it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
It's been a while. I could be remembering it wrong, but I thought it was just like their time machine was you were allowed to watch the past on TV.
Hmm. Yeah. Yes. All right. We're going to have to revisit it at some
okay.
point. Okay. you know, it does make me wonder if there has been any other Dracula time travel stories out there. Seems like there has to be. Dracula's a pretty popular character. And for crying out loud, Dracula is a character in Marvel Comics. That's how Blade started out, battling Dracula, I think. So given all the like time travel, space alien stuff that goes on in Marvel Comics, there has to have been some time travel with the old Drac at some point or another. So comic book fans, write in, let us know.
Yeah.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This next one comes to us from Thomas. Hi, Robert and Joe. Your layout of time travel types in the recent episode had me thinking. As you explain the arms race time travel theme, it reminds me of one of my guilty pleasure films, The One. While not time travel, but multiverse travel, it fits that core theme. Jet Li, as both protagonist and antagonist, gets more and more powerful, a la Highlander quickening style, and with the killing of their parallel selves across the multiverse. It's from the early 2000s, but would not be out of place in the 80s with some of the bright colors and comic book darkness, fake grime, and spotless street scenes juxtaposed. And also stars an early, though not young, Jason Statham before he learned to speak out the front of his mouth. I think it fits Weird House criteria. Check it out, Thomas. And then there's a follow-up. Sorry about the split emails, but clearly I jumped the gun in my excitement. You later in the episode ask about twin films. Jet Li plays versions of himself matching up against each other. Does that sound tempting? 3 question marks.
I've never seen the one, but I've wanted to for a long time. People have told me I would like it.
Yeah, I mean, everything lines up here on paper for me. Multiple Jet Lis. Love Jet Li. Mm-hmm. Some sort of wonky multiverse Highlander-esque theme. And I'll take Statham as a side, I guess. I've enjoyed some Statham movies. Some of the early Statham movies were at least fun. And he was in John Carpenter's Ghosts of Mars.
Oh, my God, you're right. He was in Ghosts of Mars in 2001, the same year he was in The One.
Yeah, it was a big year. He was ascending, but had not yet reached that point. Though I remember reading that, like, John Carpenter was impressed by him and was like, you know, this, we need to be in the Jason Statham business. And they were like, well, he's good, but we're in the Ice Cube business on this film.
I really wish I could love Ghosts of Mars more, either genuinely or ironically. It, truth be told, it is not that fun of a watch. It's kind of dull, but there's stuff about it that just, I wish I could see it in a different way and love it more. Like, the thing, so first of all, like, yeah, I do love some of the cast. Ice Cube is in it. Jason Statham, Pam Grier is in
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
But the main thing I always remember is that Ice Cube's character is named Desolation Williams, and people refer to him in the dialogue as Desolation. So they're just like, hey there, Desolation, what's going on?
I think I've mentioned this perhaps we've had this exact same exchange before, but Alien Covenant, there's a lot I like about it, but there's a character in that whose nickname is Tennessee. You can't have a nickname with 3 syllables to it. Like, that dude would be Tin. That would be his nickname, not Tennessee.
Right. Desolation has 4.
Yeah. Too much. But yeah, I don't know. I haven't revisited Ghosts of Mars in a long time. But I mean, on paper, yeah, good cast. Seems like a good concept. The artist Gerald Brom did some of the conceptual designs, and I've always loved Gerald Brom's art. But yeah, I don't know if it's aged enough for a revisit yet.
Sorry, I'm just over here dreaming up character names. I'm going to make a space action movie where the hero is called De-Apocalypticization Jones.
I like it, as long as it's not his nickname. I mean, according to the credits, Desolation is his first name. It's not like he's Mike, quote, Desolation Jones. He's Desolation Jones. Desolation Williams. Sorry, I'm getting it
off. No. You're wrong. Well, I just looked at Wikipedia. The Wiki claims he is James, quote, Desolation Williams.
Oh, all right. IMDb has it wrong then.
I don't know. Maybe the Wiki's wrong. Who knows? I don't know who would just make up James, though.
Yeah.
Okay, this next message comes from Chris. Chris says, hello, Rob, Joe, and JJ. You will never guess who I saw staring back at me from the arts and entertainment section of the Chicago Tribune today, none other than the one and only Burt I. Gordon in all his mustachioed glory. This must have been a response to when we did Attack of the Puppet People, the Burt I. Gordon shrink movie. Chris says, this is definitely a guy I would want to have a drink or three with. Couldn't pass up the opportunity to share this weird bit of print media overlapping with my digital media world. They did a great job sharing some nice color prints of his various movie posters as well. Please see attached. The movie posters will have to be in a separate email due to size constraints. Regards, Chris. All right, so Rob, I've attached the screenshots Chris took here. Photo of Burt I. Gordon, this doesn't look anything like the photos of him I'm familiar with, but he's much older in those. So I guess when he was young, he was a a skinny guy with sticking out ears and a big funny mustache. And the caption tells us that this is him playing a character called the Mad Russian, who was a regular on CBS Radio's The Eddie Cantor Show.
Mm, yeah, it's the look of a guy who makes weird pottery. No disrespect to weird potters. I love weird pottery.
He looks like he would be cast as a scientist in an Abbott and Costello movie.
Yeah.
But I want to read the beginning of this article, because while it does look like something I would like to get into in full, that I have a bone to pick. So the article is by Christopher Borelli, and it says, Bert I. Gordon, who died earlier this spring at the age of 100, was the absolute worst filmmaker who ever lived. Or so some might argue. You've heard Ed Wood was the worst, or Roger Corman, or maybe Michael Bay. But Gordon was not lousy for one or two decades. He was a terrible filmmaker for about 60 years, and when he got around to writing his memoir in 2010, called The Amazing Colossal Worlds of Mr. B.I.G., An Autobiographical Journey, it was the absolute worst book ever written by a filmmaker. To borrow from the lurid posters for his movies, his talent, such as it was, screamed, amazing, towering, beyond description. Just not in a good way. Now, I do appreciate the nod to how, like, the lack of modesty in the bad movies of the mid-century, like how movies from the 50s that were some of the worst ever made would say in their advertising, like, a film unlike any other will change your life. You are not prepared for the most spectacular movie event ever created. It is Attack of the Puppet People or whatever. But I also just want to go back and say, you know, Roger Corman made a lot of slapdash drive-in cheese, but I don't know any reasonable observer who would say he was the worst filmmaker who ever lived. I get why Ed Wood is in the running, but come on, Roger Corman made at least a half dozen movies that are really good, and a couple you could say are great. A Mask of the Red Death comes to mind, so I don't know why he's included there.
Yeah, plus, I mean, I would not say Bert I. Gordon was the worst filmmaker that ever lived. I mean, there are various ways you could determine that classification, but, you know, I wouldn't say he's the worst by any stretch. Does his work bring me pleasure? Yes. So that alone.
Let's look at these posters here. So we got Empire of the Ants. This is
great stuff.
Yeah, a lady in jeans on the cracked desert ground, and there's just an ant getting ready to, looks like, bite her leg off, basically. The poster for The Amazing Colossal Man actually just looks great. I love this poster, and it's a shame that there is not a good disc of this movie out there.
Yeah, I really want to come back to this one at some point, because this is a movie that I genuinely enjoy, and I think is trying to be something more than just schlock, you know? I think it's an ambitious film in its own way.
Agreed. On the other hand, you've got The Spider, which I think that is just schlock, but it does have a pretty good poster. It's got a cop shooting a machine gun at a giant spider, and somehow they just managed to like slip like a screaming horizontal woman in there. She's just lying there on like a red rectangle.
Yeah, they went for something different here. The spider's not carrying the woman, but the woman is still horizontal and laying on the ground and having a machine gun fired directly over her body.
Well, yeah, it looks like the cop is using the woman for cover.
I guess it does kind of, yeah.
He's popping out over top of her to shoot at the spider. All right, should we cap it there for today?
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds like a good place to cap it off. But we'd love to hear from everyone. Keep the listener mails coming in. We read all of it. We don't have time to respond to all of it. We don't have time to feature all of it on listener mail, but we do what we can. So it's always great to hear from all of y'all. So keep it coming. Reminder that listener mail episodes, they publish on Mondays in the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed. Core episodes on Tuesdays and Thursdays. On Wednesday, a short form artifact or monster fact episode, except when it's an omnibus episode, and then it's longer, as previously described. And then on Fridays, we set aside most serious concerns to just talk about a weird film on Weird House Cinema.
Huge thanks to our audio producer, JJ Posway. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number four best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Need an easy button to feed your baby? Baby Brezza's Formula Pro Advanced makes a perfectly mixed warm formula bottle automatically at the push of a button. No air bubbles, no fuss. Literally, choose your temp, select your ounces, push start, and you're done. Works with virtually all formulas and bottles. Say goodbye to the 3 a.m. feeding chaos and hello to this revolutionary stress-free solution. Raising a baby is hard enough. Let Baby Brezza make feeding a breeze. Get your Formula Pro Advanced at babybrezza.com.